humans, animal, friends, hybrids alike. Welcome to the Film Alchemist Podcast, show where we take the movies we love, break them apart to find out what gives them their magic, science magic, old world magic. There's no real hybrids in this movie, just throwing that out there. I'm your host, Josh Grevy, joined as always by my friend, co-host, and man who has quite a stench,
Alex Dandino.
That's right. You don't want him walking into your waiting room. All right, before today's amazing continued journey through the annals of Best Picture nominee history, The Elephant Man, a little bit of business. Everyone, it's official. We are on Patreon. If you could find it in your heart to go support a show that works hard to earn your love, Patreon.com/FilmAlchemistPod. If you could be so kind, find it in your heart to go support the show over there. We work really hard to try to make that worth the bargain. We appreciate all the support we get. We're looking to grow as always, man. So we have a huge Patreon exclusive library, commentaries, mini series. You can even have us do a double feature at your choosing. So again, that's Patreon.com/FilmAlchemistPod. Thank you in advance for your support. The YouTube, go subscribe over there. Film Alchemist. The email, filmalchemistpod@gmail.com. We're on all the socials you're on, including now TikTok, if you want to watch some shorter form content, versions of stuff over there. We appreciate it. Make sure you're leaving 5-star ratings and reviews everywhere you find podcasts, everywhere. Help us defeat the algorithmic sideshow hustlers that won't let us be Romeo. They just see us as freaks and not Romeos, kind of like everyone else in our lives. Also, if you want to see some stuff that we're trying to put out in the world, go over to misfitparade.net and see some short films that we are birthing ourselves. And some also really cool stuff coming in the future for Misfit Parade. So misfitparade.net, I know it's .net. We're like 90s hackers. It's a thing. Go over there. Enjoy it. All right. Sorry if I blew the mic out. I was a little excited. Alex.
Griff,
we've talked often. Elephant Man is one of those I can't believe we did 500 and however many episodes before we got to it. It is truly, it's going to sound weird. I wouldn't say this is a fun movie to watch. It is truly one of my favorite movies to turn on and watch. I find it a soul cleansing movie. Like when I'm in a really uneven state, I love to watch this movie and be reminded that, you know, even as much as we try to fuck it up and degrade it, there is good in human nature, right? And that there's value in us and small acts of kindness. And John Hurt's performance is John Merrick. I mean, there are a couple performances where you're just, the lovability of that character's through the roof. And right off the bat, you're like, this is up there with like John Coffey, the Iron Giant. There's a handful of them that are so insanely lovable. I'm always awestruck. Me and my wife watched this movie. We just cried for like an hour of it. But like that kind of good, like, man, I'm glad to be a human being crying. Also mixed with some of that, why do people suck? Crying.
Yeah.
Final thought before we dive in here. I've talked a little bit. I have a little bit of acting background, not a ton. I'm not like a great award-winning actor.
Fine actor.
But there is something when you act in like makeup and prosthetics and you're deep into a character, right? Like, let's say you're an alien in some fucking movie. Sometimes I feel like those masks and those tools and toys, they become this really fun weapon that kind of shields you. As a performer, it gives you armor to kind of hide. Oftentimes becoming a caricature, an animalistic movement, whatever it may be, right? It feels safer in a weird way. What I think the most astonishing fact of The Elephant Man is, and the thing that really helps elevate this movie in my mind, is John Hurt spends his whole time going the other way. John Hurt spends the whole movie giving us a performance that is begging us to not see the costume. Like many of the characters in the movie, we must acclimate to John Merrick's reality. And John Hurt's just beautiful performance where it feels like a lot of characters, I think, would use this more, would showcase it more. It feels like he's just acting right through it to where at the end it becomes imperceivable. And I think that is one of the real true achievements of the performance. Alex, I don't know if this is one of your favorite movies. I don't know if this is a five star for you like me. But opening thoughts on The Elephant Man.
You know, it's funny. Like, I feel like The Elephant Man is also one of those. We talked about this with Poor Things. Like that. The reason like Robert Downey Jr. is going to probably get the Oscar for Best Supporting and not Mark Ruffalo is because it's such a absolute inversion of like what we all know Robert Downey Jr. does best. He's doing this very different, stilted character. When you watch The Elephant Man, it is almost impossible to imagine, other than maybe like the bookends of the movie, that this is directed by David Lynch, because it's just incomprehensibly lucid somehow compared to the other movies.
It's kind of this beautiful landscape where it's
pretty great.
You get an actual, like, of all of his films, this is just about the straightest narrative. Yeah. I'd have to go through and check. But especially of like movies we would refer to.
You don't have to
right?
check.
We
I can tell you right now.
Invented an adjective, Lynchian. This is one of the least Lynchian movies of his oeuvre. But you see those moments where his kind of taste and his style really pour through.
The sort like of
when John Merrick
stuff.
Sees the theater.
Yeah.
That's where the David Lynch's absolute mastery of the surreal works so well. Instead of becoming the cake, it's just the frosting.
Yeah, him and Freddie Francis do this really beautiful. They do that dream sequence stuff just better than anybody. And I think that's what makes I think that's what makes The Elephant Man so palatable, is it starts in this very Lynchian way and then becomes real so quickly that it's sort of, again, this really specific, it's just fascinating to me. Like, again, it's not like one of my, it's,
well,
not,
like,
a,
when it starts,
it's not a go-to
and you're like,
movie for me.
Hang is on. That woman getting plowed by an elephant? You're like, that's Lynchian.
Yeah, that's Lynchian.
Like,
it's
that
not
scene
this...
seems exactly like what I thought.
It's not
and then it starts slowly becoming a more narrative film. Yeah. You're like, what?
It's not a go-to movie for me, I can say that, but I still think it's a wonderful movie. It's also one of those movies I saw much later in life than I think
I don't
want to
see like sound like one of those guys that's like, you know what I like to watch over and over? Manchester by the Sea. Like, come on now.
No. Like,
you're going to watch this a lot,
like,
but I
The Elephant Man is a great
years.
Movie to watch. Like, it's not like you're sitting there and saying, you know what I like to watch all the time? Inland Empire. Great movie. Definitely a comprehensive understanding of the human
just
condition.
Like a great series of choices, Inland Empire. Like,
like,
love that.
I think The Elephant Man being a movie that you go back to makes a lot of sense in the oeuvre of David Lynch, and just overall, like, the concepts in the story, and it is about the human condition and how we're all sort of shitty but also look how great we can be, or at least try to be. And when you do the I read up a lot last night about Merrick and Travis and all these people who are in this story, and like, a lot of this is fairly accurate to a T, like the not just the inhumanity, but the really wonderful showing of true humanity. A lot of these people really were, it's not just this thing where we're like, oh well, we got to make them sympathetic and we can't have everybody be monsters. Like, many people were actually quite pleasant and quite nice to him.
It's yes. And I think this is one of the things I think David Lynch does better than people give him credit for, which is this great kind of empathy of the multitudes of humans, right? Yeah. Like the vastness within us, right? For good and evil. I think this one, though, there is kind of an optimism in this one that I feel like Lynch, as he becomes more Lynchian, starts to lose. Now we're kind of with these wild caricatures of like 50 sex-driven maniacs and shit, right? Pips, blue ribbon, right? Like, things that we love and are great. And through the surreal setting and serving, we get the same effect. Mm-hmm. There is something about watching him just do this real, and again, it you know, Tim Burton tried to kind of pick this up and run with it, right? Like a weird monster man in the middle of a normal tale. This is, to me, like one of the best versions of this, right? Not maybe the best, but pretty close. But what it is we're watching John Merrick and watching him, like, the way I always think of this movie is the young nurse, right? Where in the first scene, she goes to give John Merrick oatmeal and she's like, right?
Yeah.
Screams, recoils, right? John Merrick, this thing in the corner, as they keep referring to, who doesn't talk. an imbecile, a complete idiot, all these things they call his ass. And by the end of the movie, when he feels safe enough to reveal who he is and reveal his soul, you watch that young nurse just as she's casually just in the room with him, admiring a sculpture he's doing or talking to him or, oh, don't you look nice? You watch this full transformation of we see something monstrous and unknown to us and we're scared. And John Merrick also is scared to show any vulnerability because of the life of absolute torment.
Yeah.
And watching these people start to kind of circle gravitationally towards each other to where, is this the moment? Is this the moment? Can we be cool? Can we all be fucking cool now? Can we try?
Yeah.
I love that game.
I think watching...
Right? Like that scene when he starts doing, what is it, the Lord's Prayer. And Anthony Hopkins psalm. Like, I didn't teach him that. Oh, the Psalms.
Psalm 26, yeah.
And he's like, I didn't teach him that bit. And he's just like, I used to read the Bible daily. It's a great... And you're just like, what?
Yeah.
And next thing you know, he's just this wonderful soul.
He's just this... It's a... I think that's the thing about the movie that's so... It's weird, too, because it's 2024, and we all know who David Lynch is for, like, the film people. We all have a very... clear concept of like who David Lynch is, how he's become David Lynch, and he's almost like a guy who's become his, like, probably his real life persona is much smaller than the person that we all think of as David Lynch. And it's sort of the same way with the Elephant Man, is we don't know who this person really is, but then, like, when you sit down and actually talk to them and about something meaningful other than just like the thing that you see is this macabre fascination, they are just this like sweet, wonderful person underneath who wants to bear their soul to anyone.
Dude, Amy and I were like ugly crying. I'm gonna try not to cry on the pod. But this movie really fucks me up. I don't know why. Like, this is one of those movies that just like cuts right to.
Yeah.
When I feel like emotionally blocked up and you're like, yeah, I'm really upset about some shit. I want to blow that all out of my system. Then go have like three cigs, like I just got plowed, you know, all night. Like, this is the movie. The scene when the actress comes to visit.
Oh, dude, Anne Bancroft, I fucking lost it. Lost
my God.
Cried.
But it's this moment of she's coming to him as a fascination, right? Or I got to see this guy.
Yeah.
And the structure of this scene, right? So she starts off, she is trying to act through her physical repulsion from him. Revulsion, right? She's physically repulsed by him.
Yeah.
She's trying. Her eyes are watering as if she wants to cry being in the sight of him, taking pity on this poor creature. He starts talking. She starts talking, right? Okay, right? He shows the picture of his mom. She gives a picture. Oh, I'll place it in a place of honor, right? All of a sudden, she's like, I brought you a book. I heard you like to read. He starts reading. And I did wonder, I was like, did Elephant Man have like real riz, as the kids say? Where he just magically opens it up to Romeo and he just starts dropping the, mine lips are dry.
Yeah.
What? What is this book? Oh my goodness. No, and he starts, right, and he starts reading it. And then she picks it up. And then he starts again and they start this interlude, right?
Yeah.
And in this moment, the art has cut through the kind of base level divide we started the scene with. And she gives him that kiss on the cheek. And you're like, he may have never had a genuine moment like that in his life.
Yeah.
Even if you say it's not genuine, I bet it felt that way to him, right? She is playing a character, but also realizes that he is, even if she looked at him like, oh, he's in a costume, whatever it is, right? She has a genuine moment where she sees through.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just this, there is this sentiment where she's, and it's one of the best lines I've ever heard in a movie. She's like, you're not an elephant man. You're Romeo.
It's just a visceral. It's,
and this movie does that scene and like viscerally that way beautiful. Like 20 times.
Yeah. That,
like, just these true moments of the things that matter in life, bringing us past these fucking tragedies.
Yeah.
Right. These unfair realities.
And it's not this like hammering over the head of like, oh, this man is like, horrible things happen to this guy in his life. Like, that is no doubt.
Well, as the doctor at the hospital says, he's like, can you imagine the life this man has led? And Anthony Hopkins is like, oh, I bet I can. Like, traditional rich white guy answer. Like,
can
and
you?
The other guy turns around, he's like, it would be an impossibility for us to imagine a day in that person's life and body.
Well, and I mean, I think that that's the really beautiful thing about the movie. Like, that scene when they're trying to throw him out, and it's like the board of directors, and the princess walks in, he's like, hey, I hope you guys
are being... we shouldn't be treating circus animals.
Yeah, and she's like, hope you guys are being super cool to your guest and not going to throw him out.
Dude, the head of the hospital has, like, some real big dick energy power
hardcore
moves.
He's like...
this whole movie, because he always seems like the guy who's going to be like, oh, this does not make financial sense. And then he always is just kind of, like, doing the coolest thing.
He's, like, quietly the coolest guy, and he's like, I got it.
The coolest fucking
guy. I mean, like, that scene choked me up, too, because I was just like, wow. All these motherfuckers were going to throw this guy out. And it's the one guy that you... it's like the one guy who's got, you know, Pottersville
energy.
If this
was an American movie, he's the guy who's feverishly trying to kick the elephant man
it's
out.
This is like... again, it's like Pottersville energy. Like, you're waiting for him to, like... he's got real Potter vibes. he's got real
your
old man Potter
vibes.
Dad
was a loser. He's going nowhere.
And you're just like, oh, dude, this is going to be the thing. And then fucking he's like, guess what? Who knows the princess? Yeah. Fuck y'all.
John Merrick's got a menagerie, dude.
But that's like, yeah. I like those like little hidden reveals of people's true natures. Like, I think that's the thing that's so wonderful about this movie. Like, The Elephant Man is such an impressive movie because without trying very hard, the movie is about the hidden nature of true, like the hidden nature of self. And because whatever facade we all have, like Joseph Merrick can't help being who he is.
John Merrick, yeah.
John Merrick is actually the name they gave him in the movie. His real name was Joseph.
Oh, his real name was Joseph. Nice.
Real name was Joseph. But yes.
Well to go.
Merrick's real nature is underneath all of that. And we just assume that we know who he is. Just like we assume we know who the main administrator is. He's going to be old man Potter. And he's like, motherfuckers, he's not going anywhere.
Well, you see him at the start, right? He's exposed at a freak show. Mm-hmm. Anthony Hopkins is kind of in on it. He just wants to show Merrick to his buddies.
Yeah, yeah.
And I believe his exact phraseology was, I've never seen a more perverted and degraded form of a human in my whole life, right?
Mm-hmm.
He talks about all of the ailments, and then he's like, side note, normal cock, makes him show that, as if he couldn't degrade him anymore, right?
Weird.
And then he just is like, all right, off you pop, get in your, you know, sack outfit and fucking head back. That should have been the end of the movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, and then it was only when the fucking drunken circus man decides he's going to flog the shit out of him.
Yeah.
And he's like, I need this guy to stay alive. So the two devils make like another handshake arrangement. And I like watching Trevor's journey of, am I the same as Bites, right? We'll get to that a little more later. But what I like is that you watch all these people that do not start as these altruistic, like,
no,
I'm here to save everyone and be great.
Nobody starts this movie with the best intentions.
Yeah, and it's only when John Merrick has the bravery to show that he is not, in fact, this sideshow attraction, but he has depth, he has heart, he has soul. Which is, and this is the secret weapon of the movie, really, is you're watching it at the start and you're like, how could these people fucking shit on someone who has it this bad? Like, I think everyone, when you see a person in that state, you're like, dear fucking God, what must their day be like, right? Exactly like the doc said. The secret weapon of the movie is when they expose how tender-hearted and grateful and happy and fearlessly joyful that John Merrick is.
Yeah.
It starts reminding us, my God.
He was
in there during all of these years of torment.
Yeah.
Just quietly observing. Making the ending so fucking devastating.
Yeah. I think what's fascinating, and this is just a credit to John Hurt. Like, he's not the person you expect to be this. Everybody is, like, we have a very specific vision of John Hurt now because, like, besides Alien, we all just know him as, you know, he was the war doctor, and then he's also just the old guy with a cool voice in a lot of movies from like the 90s on. But he is just, I could not tell. If so, you had said that was John Hurt the first time I watched him, like, no fucking way. Even as a young guy, even like when he was,
especially back then, you would have had to have been really into like British theater.
You have to know, because like John Hurt, the only movie that everyone knew him from past this was Alien at this point. So, like, this was, because this was 81, because this was 81, so he had done Alien, but, I mean, he is so fascinatingly disappeared, not just in makeup, but just in voice, character, the whole thing, like, no way, no trace of John Hurt. That's, like, this crazy acting exercise that I can't even imagine, because they were saying he had to sit for like 8 hours in the makeup chair, and I'm like, that's got to do something psychologically to you, where you're like, I'm not this person.
I remember, this is a weird movie to compare this to, but I remember reading an article where Jim Carrey walked off The Grinch.
Yeah.
Because he's like, I feel like I'm being buried alive. Like, he was so just fucking in terror of having to keep doing that they actually sent a guy in who was like an expert in like resisting torture tactics from the CIA to help Jim Carrey understand. So these actors that do these like big makeups, right? Like, you can't just go to the bathroom. You'd have to peel all of that off. You're in there for hours. Your day becomes way longer than everyone else's, because you can't just rip that off at the end.
Right.
But again, and this isn't the kind of performance where you're a monstrously formed body, right?
Right.
Like, this isn't that kind of classic, like, look at this disabled, deformed man, and now he's going to have, like, a fiery, I want to burn this place with a flamethrower.
Yeah.
He never gets that moment. He has one moment where he finally tips. But through all of that,
but
right?
It's, like, so
I just
earned.
Watched this great clip of Gandolfini, and he talked about, hey, man, I use any tool in the box to get the emotion I want on set.
Yeah.
I'll change the lines. I'll cuss out co-stars. I'll put a sharp rock in my shoe. I'll make sure that two nights before I got to do a really violent Tony Soprano scene, I'll only get 2 hours of sleep each night, so I'm just fucking agitated and on edge. That makes sense, right? That's using it.
Yeah.
It's so much easier to find things to use in that direction than to find things to say, I feel that uncomfortable and angry, but use it to be the gentlest, nicest soul ever put on a movie. That's fucking hard.
I think that's...
If John Merrick's walking around backhanding people...
Right. Well, that's the crazy inversion of the performance, is he's someone who's... Like, you should expect someone who's been dealing... Who's been dealt this hand and dealing with this his entire life to be not just on guard, but at no point with his guard down. And as soon as that psalm scene happens, it becomes this different character. Like, I think what's fascinating, if you didn't know anything about him or if you hadn't seen the movie before, I wish I had been like, this is actually one of those movie going experiences I would have liked to have been a part of. Because if you don't know anything about it, because I don't think a lot of people do, when that turn happens and Merrick becomes a real person, it's not even a jarring's not the right word, but it shifts the narrative so slightly into not this like, oh, it's about Anthony Hopkins coming to grips with the fact that he's kind of being a, you know, grandstanding dick by like putting this guy on display. It's like, oh no, that's not what this is about. This is about two people who are coming together to reveal themselves to each other and being like friendly. Yeah. And not only that, like affording someone the opportunity to live a true life rather than just, you know, this
discomfort. And I don't think the movie ever tries to make the argument, right, that it's kind of like, I feel like I've talked a lot of shit on Oppenheimer, and I'm not saying it to be rude, I'm just saying there is like kind of a base level, I feel like a lot of people watch that movie and they're like, see, Oppenheimer wasn't that bad of a guy, and you're like, no, he was the fucking worst. Like, he was one of the worst kind of men. Like, that's not a legit case the movie's laying out, right? Maybe he didn't believe he was a bad guy. He's a bad guy, right? Like, straight up bad guy. What I think this movie does is it doesn't make that kind of like hard to sell moral argument. I don't think they ever settle on that Trevor's is this great, great doctor who like saved the day. What they said is that even out of his shittiness, right? And maybe he is just another guy putting him on display. The mother even is like, I feel like he's still standing up there getting gawked at, getting stared at. Sure. But which way does he feel better? Right? John Merrick is unfortunately not a person who is going to ever be able to assert himself in that world,
right,
and have selfhood and safety and respect and dignity. He's just not going to get that. And so even though Trevor's maybe was not doing it for the best reasons, it still might have been the best result. And, you know, I think as he comes to grips with what John is, I think he kind of realizes that he wasn't doing it for the right reasons and tries harder by the end.
Yeah.
And I think, honestly, that's a very real place. I think a lot of us don't always
And I think that's
like
what's great.
Noble reasons.
It's about everybody who's coming to grips with the fact that they need to, like, it's that thing you have, it's, you know, it's that thing you teach your kids, like, oh, like when someone falls down, like you help pick them up. Like you don't just like stare at them or something like that. Like you always want to help your friends. Like this happened, I'm going to gush about my kid. This happened the other day at school. Everyone was getting out of class and some little girl fell down while they were walking to their mom, and my kid stopped and like helped her get up. And I was like, that's good.
He wasn't shooting spitwads at her and chasing her into a urinal?
Yeah, believe it or not, that was not something that was going on.
So. So your kid's not in the – he's not a villager. Good.
Yeah, no, he's not a villager. He's a...
I was just like, does he not have an abusive parent around to smack him? Like, where's the spitwad kid's, like, angry, drunken dad? Can we smack the... – I don't. I'm not a big fan of watching kids get smacked on movies, but maybe just that one. Right? Take that spitwad straw and smack the shit
definitely
out of him.
That one. That yeah, I'm not a corporal punishment guy, but
John
that
John Merrick down. I was like, what happened? Our parents used to tell us the good old days of they just used to hit us and spank us, and we were all better, and they were better parents. Where was that when you needed it?
Fucking oh,
just letting some fucking newsie chase poor John Merrick around the whole goddamn train station. Neither here nor there. It's beautiful,
the
man.
Newsies. That's the fucking movie we got denied. The Newsies crossover.
John Merrick's
extra
papes.
Extra Merrick. Merrick out and about.
Headlights don't sell papes.
Merrick
Orphans
sells papes.
Orphans and John Merrick sell papes. Actually, that's pretty much the movie we did get.
Shit. Damn it. that's
a lot of papes.
That's some Lynchian shit right there.
There you go. It's hard to talk about this movie to me beyond just like the moments of great emotional truth and resonance. Like, how about the scene when I love the moment when he goes to visit Trevor's house or Treves's house and his wife is doing the same thing. And it's this thing they set up in every scene, right? Every character who first meets Merrick has to have this like, oh, fuck, I don't like this.
Definitely.
Oh, man. Keeping it real went too far. But then watching him talk, and he's just like, oh, like what noble parents you had. And she's like, wow, I say that. Talking about the boys and when they're like, they're with their friends. And he goes, friends. And watching her cry and then watching him cry. And he's just like, I'm not used to being treated kind, especially by pretty people.
Right.
Like that's not a life I get to lead. And then he says, sorry, I made a spectacle of myself. And it's extra impactful because the universe made a spectacle of this man to the point it ruined his life.
Absolutely.
And he's worried that he made her uncomfortable because she showed the basic modicum of decency.
That it's that moment. The other one that always gets me is the standing ovation at the theater.
Because
it's the same moment, yet this like awesome opposite of the opening of the movie.
But it's probably the most important.
Oh, by far.
Of these moments in the film.
By far.
Because every other time that people come to look at him or watch him, it is to gawk and degrade him. Right? To shame him. To feel better by being in his presence. Right? This is the one time where someone looks up and they're like, my dear friend, a great person, a soul, whatever. And when Treves is like, they want to see you. Imagine what's going through John Merrick's in that mind. They want to see you as always meant shame you, laugh, point, talk shit. And the bravery of John Merrick to stand up and face those fucking rich assholes. Not they turn out to be assholes. I just assume all rich people are assholes. But he faces them. And they stand and give this man an ovation for whatever he has been through in life. He's here. He's with us. He's taking in a show, right? He's earned the respect of these people that we respect. That moment's probably not as earnest, right? It's not like a true, like, wow, they're so proud of him. It's just, you know, that's what you do when you're in a big crowd.
Yeah.
But to him, the first time in his life, he gets to stand up in front of people and be applauded.
And be, yeah. And
just
be
given any kind of warmth rather than, like, the barbs and the weapons.
Yeah.
I mean, it's brutal because that moment directly leads us to this ending, which is so fucking gut-wrenching. Because we know in that
play
he's dying.
But it also is like this really... It's this really sweet thing, to be honest. Like, it's a weird, it's such a weird, like, melancholic thing. Because,
and I'm a huge proponent of if you're in pain and misery all the time.
Yeah.
Like, I tell my wife this all the time. If I was that miserable every day and I had, like, the best day ever.
I read about this. So, the official cause of death that they listed for him was asphyxia. But,
yeah, because I was wondering, I was like, why is his head being big going to kill him?
So
I couldn't quite parse that out.
So, Travis did the autopsy, and he discovered what it was Merrick broke his neck sleeping, lying down.
Got to think his neck would be strong as shit.
Well, and he
point.
Was quoted saying, I think the reason that he, like, they were like, why would he do that to himself? Is like, I think he wanted to sleep like a normal person or attempt.
Well, that's definitely a theme. Is that, I think Big what time. He really wants is he wants to do everything like a normal
he
person.
He just wants to be a person. Like a right? person. I think that's a crazy thing. It's not about being a normal person. It's just being a person. Because he spent so much like, he's not treated that way.
It's the Andre the Giant thing he said in the documentary where like people be like, wow, you're Andre the Giant. That must be great. And he's like, what I would give to just be a normal sized man, to just go places and be comfortable and no one look at me and sneak into a restaurant or a theater. Sometimes I think we all are trained in society to want this like fame and adulation, and what it's not how people are supposed to exist, man. I don't think that's how it's meant to be. And I think if you're one of those rare people where like you cannot move in the world, and again, like Leonardo DiCaprio's version of that is very different than John Merrick's.
Right.
But again, it just those small things that we all take for granted as we bitch about how we're not those famous people. And again, just because he signs his name, like, it's done, right, on his little, you know, building model, whatever. And the way he gently, like, lays his pillows out and pats them. Like, it's there's a real kind of, like, happiness and ritual. It's not
it's
this
beautiful.
Morning frantic, like, I want it to be done. It's just this, it's almost as if you hear him, it's his beautiful song
it's
in
just
his head. And I just want to let go, man. I want to rest.
It's just an exhale. It's really beautiful.
It is. It's beautiful. It's devastating. And then we get this weird, like, fucking Star Child mom thing. And I still don't even know if we're supposed to think that's actually his mom.
I think we are. But again, like, that's what I've always assumed. I could just
so when they
wrong.
Do a line from the mom in the last thing we see in
where
space,
she's doing the Tennyson poem. Yeah. That's
that to
be
me.
Her.
But again, because it's not her words, but a poem, you're like, I don't know if it matters. I think it's something he clung to. But again, going back to Trevor's house when he's like, she had the eyes of an angel. I must have been such a disappointment to her.
Mm.
Fuck, man. I'm getting choked up again. And she just said, no son, you know, who does as good as you could be a disappointment to their mom. And knowing we're parents, right? That mom at some point just, I can't do it. I can't take
can't
care of it.
Can't even imagine.
Like,
it's
was
just...
it at birth? Was it when he was a teenager? How well did he know her? Again, this is like the movie also does this good job of showing us these small transgressions, right, against him that are so appalling.
Yeah.
And then also reminds us, hey, write that back for his entire fucking life. The degradation of this fucking man and for his soul to not be dimmed. You know, that's why you love him so much, right?
Oh, yeah.
It's the, you know, everyone's like, we love Rocky because he keeps getting punched, but he always stands back up, right? It's like, yeah, John Merrick does that like 1,000
all
times
the time.
A day.
That's his life.
Every single fucking
day. John Merrick
day.
Lives there.
And it's devastating, right? Like we get the, you know, we see the way that the other guy flogs him and he lives in filth and he smells bad. He's unwashed. He has this potato sack to try to limp through the world. He finally starts to do a little better. And all of a sudden this guy's like, this is my fucking ticket. And he starts selling shows at the bar. That scene is probably the most excruciating. Well, definitely is the most excruciating.
Yeah.
Of him with his cane and his dressing kit, right? And he's putting a little good scent on him, right? He probably, mm-hmm. I like smelling good smells. That has never been a thing. And he's like, oh, hello. He's pretending to be among society.
Yeah.
And as he does, his imagining himself as a person amongst the world. We don't know if he imagines himself as he is or as a fully able-bodied person, right? The real world kicks his fucking door down. They hold women's face to him to fucking degrade him. He's so fucking disgusting.
It's so horrible to watch.
They start drinking on him and pouring booze on him and pushing him around. The guy, whatever he says, Shorty or Shorts, whatever his name is, starts moving him around like a doll in the window. It's so unbearable to watch after this bond we formed with this character.
Yeah.
Another thing about that scene, if you watch, is that you know Bites is in there,
mm-hmm.
and they never show him.
No.
And you're like, so as bad as this is, you're like, we have yet to begin the real fucking horror of this reality. It's such a fucking... It's one of the more appalling scenes in a movie that doesn't really show you a lot of violence or sex crime. It's just... The violence is just against the soul.
It's a violation of goodness. Like anytime you see someone doing good or being good or harmless, this is like why
harmless is the best word.
This is why, like, you know, this is why violence against children is just so fucking wrong to me, and it just like never. Like, besides The Real World, thematically in movies,
except
is also
for
just
that harmless. Kid with the spit wad.
Except for that kid with the spit wad,
whooped.
His parents should get fucking spanked too. For all I care,
you want to live like an adult. You're gonna catch.
You
want to
live
like
an adult. You're gonna get law and ordered right into court, kid.
Normal kids, fine. Kids whose society have left behind and become lost boys, beat them. No, just kidding. We're anti all of it.
No, but like,
I just wish you wouldn't have shot spit wads at John Merrick.
I do too. And then, but it also leads up to this. You finally get this. Like in the trains, that's train station scene where he says his famous line. You finally get this really. There's so much like that is such a great like match to the wick, so that when it finally happens, the catharsis of him shouting feels so, you're like, oh my God, this guy finally got to let loose and he didn't even do anything wrong. He was just like, guys, leave me alone.
It's also the stretch of the movie that makes him feel very real.
Yeah.
Right. A lot of the movie, I think you could say that it plays a little Pollyanna. Right? This like, oh, he's the nicest guy ever all the time. It feels like, come on, was this guy really that fucking nice and happy? And come on, like this feels like some Hollywood bullshit. But when you watch him suffer, right? When you watch him being locked in a cage with baboons and treated like shit, and the other circus folk help him get him on a boat, and they just say, who needs luck if not us, right? And they send him on his way. You watch this long boat passage and you're like, what must that fucking be for him?
Right.
He has to get on a train. What must that be? He's trying to fucking limp. He's dying. He's sick. He's been on this long journey. He's trying to limp through the station. Some little kid's like, there's a target.
Yeah.
He tries to get away. He only has the one eye hole. He bumps a girl. They're screaming. The chaos, the anarchy of that scene. And he runs in and gets caught on the cage and he's just like, fuck.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be out of this anymore. Well, I want to be out of this room, this place, this body. You feel it. You're so bunched up. And when he just, I am not an animal. Right? And he's like, I am a man. It is.
It's like the first. I'll also say this. Might be the first time, only time in cinematic history where the cops intervene. You're like, oh, finally the cops are here. Jeez.
Well, it's one of those scenes where you expect that to happen through clubs, right? Him, you know. Standing pat and screaming his humanity to the world, and the world not understanding and hitting him.
Yeah.
And I think the movie makes a good choice, which is it pauses. And as he says that, everyone takes a step back, which is a visual sign to us that they are now looking at him a bit differently.
Mm-hmm.
They're giving him space. They're like, what if that was me? Right? They have a small moment of empathy. That as he bears his soul, he is seen, even in this kind of pitiful sense. And it's amazing.
Yeah.
It's one of my favorite movie moments ever. I love it.
I want to, this movie was a real dark horse, by the way. It made a lot of money. Also, the reason Anne Bancroft's in it also is because Mel Brooks. Sorry, I was about to say Max Brooks. That's his son. Mel Brooks was one of the producers. And like also was one of the, he was like the last word on hiring David Lynch to do this movie, which is pretty cool.
Yep.
It got nominated for 8 Oscars. It won 6 awards. None of them are Oscars.
None of them?
So it won at the BAFTAs, Best Film.
This is like a BAFTAs movie, right?
Best Film, Best Actor, Best Production Design, and it was nominated for 4 other categories. And then it won Best Cinematographer for the British Society of Cinematographers. It was nominated in 8 categories of the 1981 Academy Awards. Did not win one of them.
That's fucking horrible.
It got nominated for Best Picture, Best Director, Best Adapted Screenplay.
What was up in that class? Do you have that pulled up?
I do, actually. Best Picture, Best Director, Best Actor, Best Adapted Screenplay, Best Art Direction, Best Costume Design, Best Film Editing, and Best Original Score. Tell me the category that's missing from this movie.
What?
Best Makeup.
Oh my God, I guess I just put that in with costume. Yeah, how is this not up for Best Makeup?
There was an outcry of complaints, and the category was created because of the Elephant Man for the next year. That is why.
Wow. Oscar history for the Elephant Man. I love that.
Okay, so the Best Picture.
That's fucking insane.
It's crazy. So the Best Picture category the year that the Elephant Man came out was Ordinary People, Coal Miner's Daughter, The Elephant Man, Raging Bull, and Tess.
I mean, Raging Bull, that's like the clash of the powerhouse black and whites.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, Raging Bull defeating Elephant Man, you're like, nothing to see here.
Well, the best picture went to Ordinary People.
Well, right. That's the one where you're like, I don't feel like history has been super kind to Ordinary People. Have you ever been at a bar and someone's like, you know what movie I fucking love? Ordinary People. You'd have to be at a real fucking weird James Bond bar, I guess. Neither here nor there. The Oscars always do. This is one of those arguments that I know has become popular that I think is one of the dumbest things I've ever heard. I think Bill Simmons, bless his heart. I love Bill Simmons. I think he's one of these guys. He's like, we should hold the Oscars 5-year delayed, right?
Yeah.
So that then we can really decide who liked all the movies the best and which ones have stayed with us.
Yeah. I.
The reason that's dumb is because the Oscars are specifically a snapshot in time.
Right.
And a movie like Ordinary People would have been completely lost to the sands of time if not for the award.
Yeah.
So I think it's important and valuable that movies win in the moment that wouldn't win 5 years from now. Has anyone ever mentioned out loud Power of the Dog again since that happened? No, and that was like the huge front runner that Jen just stumbled as the award season went on. But had that movie won, we'd remember it.
Yeah.
Now, only the biggest film nerds even remember what the fuck that movie is. And that was just within the last couple years.
Yeah.
You start going back and back, like movies like Ordinary People disappear.
I think a movie like Ordinary People becomes a very popular movie for one, like, I mean, and the other thing too is like Robert Redford won Best Director, which I think is pretty. Robert Redford beat David Lynch, Martin Scorsese, and Roman Polanski that year, which is pretty insane.
Yeah, I mean, he is like one of those very beloved Hollywood people. Anyways,
either way, again, it's a fascinating.
That feels like if I was a voter, I think I'd vote for Elephant Man. It's kind of exactly in my wheelhouse.
Yeah. Well, that year,
that felt like Raging Bull should have fucking ripped that Oscars
year,
apart.
Well, that year, Elephant Man and Raging Bull tied for the most nominations with 8 each. Yeah.
And the Elephant Man got dick.
Elephant Man got dick. Robert
A very
De Niro
normal won, dick, an unafflicted dick.
Robert De Niro won Best Actor.
Yeah, I mean, come on, that's
that was pretty.
If you're gonna
much
beat John Hurt, that's the one.
Yeah, but
that's an incredible performance by him.
Yeah, so he. But I mean, other than that, it's pretty. It was kind of varied, to be honest with you. I will say it's weird that Ordinary People won Best Adapted Screenplay as opposed to like The Elephant Man or The Stunt Man, which was another one that I'm surprised I didn't realize was that year. That was like an action comedy too, and a start.
It's weird. I guess The Ordinary People is so vanilla and unmemorable in my brain that it's hard to imagine.
It does like. I know it's an important movie for a lot of people, and I'm not saying it's a bad movie either. It is one of those things, though, that kind of is just a movie. Like, I'm aware that it happened, and I'm aware
Is there irony in the fact that ordinary people have never seen the movie?
I'll be
ordinary
honest with
people,
you. The title says it all for me. Yeah. Ordinary people.
Do you know any ordinary people? They definitely have not seen Best Picture winner Ordinary People. No, it's... I don't... Let's do this as our last little examination. Right? I love the final moment with Treves and him getting ready to go to the gala.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother Superior, whatever her name is, she's getting ready. The young nurse is going. They're getting all gussied up. They're like part of his family now, right? Like, it's become this weird little unit, right? And again, I'm not prescribing all this fucking altruism that isn't there. I just love the moment where John Merrick kind of starts walking us through this kind of theme of the movie, right? Which is, he starts talking, and it's hard because he just starts this bit, right? And he goes, don't be sad for me, right? Essentially is kind of his gist. Yeah. And he goes, my life is full because I know that I am loved, right?
Right.
Which this is after he gets back from being re-abducted and traumatized in his room, right? Right. And then he looks around and he just says, if nothing else, Treves, you have allowed me to gain myself. And I think in a lesser filmmaker's hands, right, this becomes a movie about Treves finding himself and the Elephant Man just becoming the springboard that allows him to have that emotional revelation.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that this movie, to me, stays true to... It is about John Merrick finding himself and gaining himself and being able to show himself to people, even if they're there to gawk at him, to show them the contents of his soul and character and really win people over and affect them and give them a greater appreciation of life and kindnesses and the affliction that other people bear that we'll never understand. That moment of, you know, I'm happy because I was loved and I have gained myself. It's almost hard to accept that at the end of the journey we've been on.
It's a level of honesty and soul that I think makes it.
Yeah.
Something. It makes the movie something to aspire to. Like, you feel, I finished watching the movie like with a level of sadness because you're obviously sad because, you know, this man who's so sweet and the world showed him such ferocity and terror, but he found such kindness in so many interesting places. But I also was like, man,
yes.
I'm not going to be a total cynical piece of shit to, like, people that I think are, like, not saying I'm, like, I don't walk around laughing at people's physical deformities or anything like that, but, like, people who are, for instance, annoying me. I, you know, maybe we'll be a little
people
more sympathetic.
People in your day-to-day life.
Because I don't know what they're going. You never know what someone's going
to. Well, it's just a reminder. Like, you're unlikely to run across someone like John Merrick. But there are a lot of people going through a lot of shit, man. And, you know, just don't be one of those people that adds to the world, not takes away. That's all. I mean, we teach that to our kids. That's like my one life lesson. And I'm like, just don't be one of those people
just
that takes away joy from the world.
Yeah.
And it's hard because... Again, I think John Merrick also is aspirational in the sense of
very much
here
so.
Is this man who has been through such the depths of hell that is he is truly able to appreciate the kindness of one moment. The ability he's truly appreciative of one act of kindness. Whereas a lot of us, we're like, ah, my fucking life, my day, fuck me. Right? Somebody kill me. Like, all the shit we say jokingly as we feel overwhelmed and stressed.
Yeah.
But you have friends to talk to online, or you have someone at home to hug you. You have a dog, right? You can go places. You can just exist in the world. That we have it so baseline good that we can't appreciate it. And there's something about watching him just get a dressing kit. I was like, is that just shaving cream? He's like, oh.
Yeah.
And it's because to him, you're like, imagine
yeah.
like imagine him in that fucking wet, moist cave he was in, imagining that someday someone would ask him how he's feeling, give him a present, take him to a theater, even if it's not because they're a saint, but just because they've learned to be better,
mm-hmm.
right? That he could talk to someone.
That's all it takes.
Be you're like, yeah.
That's all it takes.
His mom could not have been disappointed in him, I think, is what you learn by the end of the movie.
Yeah. It's a good
and
take,
we'd all right? be better off if we were more like John Merrick. And that's why he's a movie character, because he's probably a better version than most of us can aspire to. But, and again, the fact that it's David Lynch that takes us on this really just kind of optimistic and sweet journey into the soul of this creature, this monster who becomes to us a man, a friend, a peer. It's beautiful, man. And honestly, it made me a little wish that David Lynch had kept a little of this somewhere.
Yeah, I think he got doomed.
Not that I take away his awesome movies we have.
No, I agree.
He's
but
not like Wes Anderson that got lost in
No, but
his
I
adjective.
Think it's one of those things where there's such humanity in the movie that you wonder if, like, maybe if Dune had been a huge hit, maybe we would have gotten another round of the Elephant yeah. Man style humanity. I don't know.
Or maybe he did that story and he's like, you know what? I have another way I like to do shit, and we got great movies for it.
Yeah, I'm not saying
we
got bad movies.
Like bad movies because
no,
he
at
went
all.
Stylistic.
He just.
It's just, honestly, I think
David
it's
Lynch.
Incredible. And again, I think he's better at that than people give him credit for. Because it's not the first thing that leaps to mind when you think of him, but. To me, it's a hard watch, but it's one of those movies that makes me happier to be alive when I do watch it. And I think to create great feeling and emotions in an audience is the best compliment you could give any movie. I think it's one of the best.
Agreed.
I think it's one of the best.
It's the best.
That's it! For the Elephant Man. He was not a monster. He was not an animal. He was Romeo, man.
It's that Bites and that little kid who were the monsters.
Fucking Bites, dude. That's one of those characters
fuck
you're
that
like,
guy.
If I could use my Pleasantville-like card to jump into one movie and whoop someone's ass,
him.
You're like, I would jump in and whip Bites' ass for sure.
Absolutely.
He's on the list. Beautiful film, man. Speaking of beautiful films, we are almost done with Oscar month. We hope you enjoyed our Oscar month. We hope you enjoyed Poor Things. We hope you enjoyed the Oscars as they are a time to celebrate movies. We hope that you went to Patreon and enjoyed our Patreon exclusive and our Mad Max feature length commentary.
What?
Right? We had a lot of good stuff this month. We hope you've been enjoying it. We have one more Best Picture nominee coming to you next week. And then we start a very special event in J-April. Fans of the show might remember last April we did all of the Planet of the Apes franchise with our friend, comic book artist extraordinaire Jay Rollins. He has staked claim to one calendar month every year. J-April is now his domain. We are but weary travelers in J-April.
Yes.
And he has decided it would be awesome for all of us who were so influenced by it to discuss the Viewisk universe.
Woo!
Which I'm very excited about.
Me too.
So we'll be doing the Kevin Smith Viewisk universe. Most of it as this month unfurls. So if you would love to join us over there, we would love to have you. Go to patreon.com/filmalchemistpod to get every show. Go to YouTube to get visual content, Film Alchemist. The email filmalchemistpod@gmail.com. We're on all the socials, including TikTok. Make sure you leave 5-star ratings and reviews. And please, please, help us out and go to misfitparade.net to see some stuff that we are working on and trying to put out into the world. Help support the show. Let friends know what we're doing. We appreciate it. More than anything, thanks for the time. For the Film Alchemist, I'm Josh Griffey.
I'm Alex D'Andino.